Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got a little bit of both basketball and football. We've got some news to get to on the front end regarding the basketball team, Nate Reavers, Trevor Anderson, both announcing some new plans for them moving forward. So we'll talk about that before we get into some football talk. Joe Rudolph spoke to the media. We'll kind of break down a few of the things he said, and then we'll get into, I think, what will be a really fun exercise. We mentioned it last show, a make-or-break episode, and kind of what that means is the spring football, who is kind of in a position where it's make-or-break for them to either see the field or maybe drop down the depth charts a little bit. So guys that are kind of in precarious positions, maybe they've got a couple guys in front of them, some guys on their heels. So I think it'll be a really fun exercise to kind of give you an idea of who to maybe keep an eye on as spring football progresses. I know, of course, we only get what you get from the media in terms of how each guy is doing. You don't get to see a lot of the practices, but I think it'll be a fun exercise to kind of see where some guys are at in our minds, at least. So should be a lot of fun as we round out the episode and round out the week. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I think this episode's going to be a lot of fun. I know we usually like to do those exercises where we can kind of ping pong back and forth, kind of break down and get into some of the more finer nuances of everything in terms of the team for football. And then, yeah, some basketball news and notes. And obviously Barry retiring was gigantic news. So we should probably touch on that as well. But how are you doing?
That's a good call. Yeah, I completely glossed over that we hadn't talked about that already. But, yeah, no, I'm good. I think that's definitely a worthy talking point that Jake Ferguson's grandpa, I think, was kind of an important guy. So we'll hit on that a little bit here. Let me add that to the show notes. But before we do that, before we get into football, let's talk about basketball here. Nate Reavers announces that he will hire an agent, pursue professional basketball. I know, of course, there were rumors before in the transfer portal looking for possibly a new home. And then I thought maybe that this would end up being the case. I know we had kind of talked about it a little bit, that maybe this was just kind of a feeling out process for him. But he has decided to hire an agent, pursue the professional basketball world. I definitely think, I don't know about an NBA career. I could definitely see him having a lot of success playing somewhere overseas in one of those leagues. A lot of those guys have a lot of success doing that. So what did you make of the recent Nate Reavers announcement?
Yeah, I think it makes a ton of sense, and really the only reason it sounds like he really put his name into the portal was to kind of keep his options open, and I mean that even gave the opportunity to come back to Wisconsin as well, as we saw that happened at Indiana today with Race Thompson. But I think it's the best move for him. I don't think he could have gotten a whole lot out of coming back and playing another year collegiately. Instead, go make your money. I'm guessing it's going to be over the pond somewhere, and I think he's going to have a tremendous future there, whether it be in basketball or anything else he goes for afterwards. But I just think if he would have come and entered the transfer portal and gone to somewhere else to play, that there just wasn't as much to gain from it, whereas you're pausing the opportunity to make money, and everybody knows money matters right now, and that's what's in the best interest of him.
Yeah, I think it makes a ton of sense. I know the recency bias of us this year, Nate Reavers didn't have a great year, but you know, the year before that, he was the leading scorer, really strong player. So I think in terms of talent, he's got all the talent to play somewhere and make a really sizable strong career. You know, they get paid well to play in those leagues. It's not like the NBA is the only league in the world that pays you money to play basketball. There are plenty of opportunities. We've seen it with Badgers in the past. You know, Sam Decker's had a pretty strong career out of it that way, playing overseas now after, you know, starting out in the NBA. So I wish him the best of luck as a big that can knock down shots. He's got plenty of talent to do it, and I think it could be fun for him to kind of get into that new world. Because, yeah, like you said, college basketball there certainly was someone where he could have played. He could have came back to Wisconsin and played. But at the same time, you could go make some money, see the world, travel, play some basketball, and get paid to do it. That's not so bad either. So it makes a lot of sense, I think, for Nate Reavers to kind of go this avenue.
Yeah, that's got to be the life in a lot of ways. But I think he has an opportunity to really excel overseas as well. He's a finesse big man. Depending upon where he chooses or where he's signed to, there's it's a little bit more finesse over there instead of playing in the NBA. He doesn't have to go against Travion Williams beating him down in the post. Instead, he's going to be going up against a different brand of basketball. So I think as a pick and pop big man who can block shots, I think he has a wealth of talents that can help out a team overseas.
Most definitely. All right, moving on down the line here, Trevor Anderson also found his new home, Valparaiso. I think makes a lot of sense for him in terms of where he's going and looking to go. Of course, started at Green Bay, ended up Wisconsin, now going down a little bit into a different league. What did you make of his move, and how do you think that'll pan out for him?
I think it makes sense. I think most people assume that he would kind of stay in state, either at Milwaukee or even maybe go back to Green Bay. But Missouri Valley going down to Valparaiso, I think is good. I think he's going to have a better chance of playing there for sure. Like if he's wanting starter minutes, I think that's a league that he can probably be a starter in and play major minutes at. So I think it's best of luck to him. I think it's a good league to play in. I didn't see that kind of as the move, but I think after taking a step back and looking at it makes a ton of sense, especially if he's got 1 year, wants to really play his best basketball. And, you know, he even said it, he's excited for one last ride before I put the ball down for good. That's insinuating he's probably not going to be looking at playing beyond this next year, like playing professionally in some way. Instead, try to have a really good run at Valparaiso for a year and see if you can help them win a conference title.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. You're looking for minutes. You know, there's going to be programs across the country that similar to Nate Reavers can, you know, in his situation, I think it was better for him to go play. Trevor Anderson's situation, maybe you don't have that professional basketball aspect, you know, looking in your future and in the mirror. That way you just say, all right, I'm going to go find a place that I think I can play. Make a run at the conference tournaments and make try to get a team in the NCAA tournament and give it one last ride and then go off into your career in Sunset. I think sometimes in college athletics you put a lot of pressure on yourself to, of course, make it to the next level, and everyone has that dream. But we see those athlete, you know, those student athlete commercials that they'll go professional something other than sports. Trevor Anderson, I think, knows that, you know, he's not going to probably be a guy that's playing professionally. So, hey, go find a place where you're going to play plenty and make a run at it, and then you can do whatever you want in terms of a career. That's not a bad option. That's not a knock on him at all. It's just some self-reflection to know that that's what he's gotten, and that's probably what he wants to do, I think, in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the most prolific high school basketball players to come around in like the last 10 years. I think you look at what he did at Spash, he's got a legacy back here in the state. Go find another spot that you can network, find some connections at that you could use professionally to help you out. It's kind of crazy because it's almost like he probably would have been better just to stay at Green Bay in the long run, but I'm guessing he has no regrets and was happy that he made the move to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, as a kid growing up in the state of Wisconsin, you dream of playing for the Badgers, so having that shot was certainly makes sense for him. But again, we wish both Nate Reavers and Trevor Anderson the best of luck at their next steps. They were fun to watch as Badgers, but it'll be fun to see where they go in the future and how they have success in their next path of life. So moving on down the line here, speaking of moving on into the sunset, Barry Alvarez announced his retirement. I can't believe I didn't have that in the early show notes. Again, I thought we already talked about it, but it's been a few days. And what can you really say about Barry Alvarez that hasn't already been said? Phenomenal head coach, really brought Wisconsin football in itself back to, you know, where we are at today, you know, a top 10, 15 program consistently. The grassroots buildup of that was of course, Barry Alvarez. But I think beyond football as well, he deserves just as much recognition as the athletic director. Huge part in contributing and bringing Wisconsin athletics as a whole to a higher realm of success. A big part of the Big Ten Conference, was, of course, part of the College Football Playoff Committee. All these things Barry Alvarez was very much a part of. So he'll be missed for sure. He had a huge impact on Wisconsin athletics as a whole. And but I think he's also very deserving of a nice, happy retirement where he can go kick back and put his feet up, because if anyone deserves it, it's certainly Barry.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at the last 32 years in Madison that he's kind of put together, and really he's been one of the most influential ADs in the entire country. He's been involved in so many different things, including the buildup of not only Wisconsin football, or build back up of Wisconsin football, but also the buildup of countless facilities, countless other sports. You look at where the program was, or the athletic program in general before he got here, and where the money was in terms of before he got here, and it's a night and day difference. He went into a spot in that football program in which it was quite a dumpster fire in a lot of ways, and turned it into a consistent winner and one of the most consistent and best programs in the entire country. And he's done the same with the athletic department, and I think you look back and those initial words in his introductory press conference where he just, and I know it's in the walk-in of football games where he talks about, you got to get your tickets now, and I'm telling you, he put his money where his mouth was, and he did phenomenal things, and his impact not only was so huge on the football program, but that ripples out to the entire athletic department before he got to be an AD, and really the university in general. I guarantee you that if you could go through a fine-tooth comb of how many students have been coming to the University of Wisconsin, and enrollments outside of the state have greatly gone up just because of the efforts and the work that he did to build up the Wisconsin brand and really just kind of really just firm up a legacy of what he did and putting everything in his eyes. And it's one of those things where, like you said, you can't really put it into words, because he is the Don. He's done so much for Wisconsin, the state, the athletic department, and really, I think I can speak on both behalf of both of us. We're just incredibly grateful for everything that he's done.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, just even as fans, you know, to be able to watch a football program and an athletic program as a whole have success, that brings a lot of excitement. It takes a lot of work from athletic directors behind the scenes. And Barry Alvarez was, of course, you know, started out bringing that football program back, but the rest of the programs were all revitalized in part way to him. So it's nice, and he had a very strong career, and I think it's really telling of the person he is that you can have success in one endeavor and then go on to an even as fruitful and successful career, you know, kind of transition after it, which is really impressive, because there's not a lot of college football coaches, I think, that could just step into an AD role. Like, if I think of Paul Chryst, you know, he's a great football coach, but I cannot imagine him, you know, making budget decisions and other sporting decisions and stuff. He's a football guy, and that's what he is. Barry Alvarez was a little bit more than that, and he had the abilities to kind of, you know, take on a different program or a different role than what most college football coaches could step into after stepping down and putting the headset down. So tip of the cap to him, and certainly wish him the best of luck as he moves into retirement. Very well deserved.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you look at what he was able to do to sustain success that not only Pat Richter and Donna Shalala kind of put into works when he started, but for him to take everything and make it just what it is now, and most likely being handed off to Chryst McIntosh, at least I would guess he's probably the odds on favorite. It's in a much better spot than what it was back in 1990.
Most definitely. We wish Barry the Don the best of luck as he moves into retirement. I loved Jake Ferguson's tweet about going to get in gin and tonic. He'll certainly enjoy that, I'm sure. All right, moving on down in terms of football news. Joe Rudolph spoke to the media. I did not get a chance to listen to it. I just kind of read up on stuff, but I noticed he talked a lot about Logan Brown, mentioned a little bit about Jack Nelson. So what were your impressions of his speaking to the media?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was that he went ahead and shared his two deep. I mean, anybody who's had the pleasure of talking or listening to Joe Rudolph knows that he lets you know what he's thinking. He doesn't try to sugarcoat things. And really, when you look at how much he gave away, he told us exactly what was going on. It was also great to hear from Caden Lyles talking about how he's 100% back, and I think that's huge just given all the injuries that he's sustained throughout his time. But I thought that the move of Tyler Beach to left tackle right now and competing with Logan Brown is really fascinating. You can tell that they want to get their top five out there, which has always been Rudolph's motto. Bruss at right tackle, and I've been talking about it, and I know you have too, that we both kept saying that Jack Nelson's the guy that's eventually going to be too good, and that we thought he was going to have a chance to be a starter this year at guard, and sure enough, he's running with the starting five at right guard. I think Jack Nelson's going to be a starter, whether he's the full-time starter or shares those duties. I could see him potentially shifting back to left guard to go back and forth with Josh Seltzner, kind of like what we've seen in the past. And Logan Brown goes to start at left tackle, Tyler Beach back to right guard. But I think right now you're seeing that Beach, Lyles, Nelson, Brust, I think are for sure five guys that are going to be out there no matter what. I think the real battle at left guard between Seltzner, Cormac Sampson, and then potentially Jack Nelson, Tyler Beach, if they stay at guard or shift to guard, I should say, really is going to be the interesting thing to watch. But I think overall, Rudolph seems like to be happy with where he's at. He's looking for consistency from Logan Brown. And really, I think everybody's looking for a better performance from the offensive line coming into this year.
Yeah, it's certainly when you have success that Wisconsin football's had in terms of running the football and having these big, strong offensive lines that you rely on. Last year was certainly considered a down year, so you're expecting a bounce back, especially when you look at the talent that they've got throughout the starting five, the second five, and really some you guys that are considered third string are guys that are really talented that are up and coming and going to make a run at playing a lot of quality football in the future. Maybe it's not this year in terms of spring football and into the fall, but in the coming years they've got a lot of depth and a lot of talent, so you expect that room to be clicking the way it should. And part of that, I think, success will bring is Joe Rudolph being back in terms of full focus kind of on that, not calling plays. I think he's probably fully vested into getting his best out of his guys and getting the best five on the field. So I think that was really interesting. I'm glad you brought up the Jack Nelson thing because, yeah, I mean, he's just too talented, I think, not to play. The guy is just a beast in terms of size and strength from everything you've kind of seen, even in just the brief glimpses of him in high school in terms of his tape, was just bigger and stronger and better than the guys he was going against. So it's no surprise that he's working his way into the fold that way. And I think it's going to be an interesting battle for him. Logan Brown, I know that Joe Rudolph kind of said, there's some plays that he just flashes the brilliance that you see from him and some plays that struggles, and that's part of the development as a young offensive lineman. So it's really going to be interesting to see, how that group shakes out, which five are out there and which five are going to be pushing for time. And I would guess in our next exercise we'll probably have some names on there that kind of talks about, make or break situations for some of these guys.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm glad you kind of brought up just – how talented Nelson is. I think his athleticism is going to be big as well. That'll give him a chance to be a 6'7" guard, which is usually pretty tall for an interior offensive lineman. But I thought another thing that really jumped out was the absence, both in the too deep, as well as in that third group that included Riley Malman, Ben Barton, Dylan Barrett, and Blake Smith back, was the complete absence of Joe Tippmann. And he was a guy, four-star kid, who he saw getting reps as a true freshman at center and looked like he was going to have a pretty bright career. We didn't see him at all last year. And then now we're not seeing anything involving him in spring right now. I'm assuming it's probably injury related, maybe. I know for the offensive line and really any position in football, the best, ability is availability. And if he's struggling with that, it's going to make it hard for him to get on the field. I'm hoping that he can turn it around because I would think that he would be kind of the next up behind Lyles, you would think, at center or even fighting for one of those guard spots. But as of right now, to not see him was something that jumped out to me as well.
Yeah, it's certainly newsworthy that, you know, some of these names that are up and coming, you there's just so much depth and talent in this offensive line room that if you're not out there and playing and getting reps, it's very possible that you could get bypassed by some of these other guys. And, of course, you know, in that situation, it could be injury-related. But even if it's injury-related or not, you know, guys got to be out there. Guys are getting reps, and you can move up the depth chart. You know, it sucks if a guy's injured, but at the same time, you've got your opportunity to get on the field. You've got to take it and not really feel bad about it. So how that offensive line room completely shakes out is going to be completely fascinating.
Yeah, and that's the reason why it's so important that they continue to stockpile four- and five-star kids, because Tippmann was a four-star kid, and we don't know where he's at right now. And that tells you about not only the depth they have, but what can happen in a guy's career. I mean, Caden Lyles, I mentioned his injury concerns and how many different ebbs and flows he's had playing defense, being injured, and fighting through injuries. It can happen to anybody. So hopefully Tippmann is back and ready to roll or is healthy and is able to kind of find a niche in the offensive line. But really, it's going to be a fun battle because there's a long time before that first game against Penn State.
Got some time to either rise up the depth chart or fall down it, which I think is a nice transition. But before we get into the make or break segment, it'll be a fun exercise. Let's go ahead and get our ad reads out of the way, and we'll be right back with you shortly.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Spring football is a very important time for the coaches to get an eye and a look without the pressures of game week going, but it's also time for players to make an impact, make themselves get onto the field, make them prove that they're the ones that need to be on there. But in a lot of these situations that we're about to talk about, there are guys that either have got some people in front of them, got some guys on their tails, and it's really sink or swim time, make or break time for some of these guys in terms of the exercise. So it should be a lot of fun to kind of look at some of these position battles. I mean, some of them have starters in front of them, but it should be a nice little further in-depth look instead of just your traditional 1-2 depth chart that way. So we'll each kind of go through our list here. How about, Matt, you go ahead and go first with your first name that you've got listed as a make or break.
How fitting is it that I'm just going to talk about one of the guys that I've been talking about for the past 2 years, and that's Isaac Garendo at running back. He, like, as everybody knows, he came in as a wide receiver recruit, shifted over to running back, has bounced back and forth, but he's been at running back the past couple years. Another kid who's dealt with availability issues, those hamstrings, man. He added some weight. He's up to closer to 220 pounds, which I think is good for him at 6 feet. He was a guy who came into last season after really making some waves as a redshirt freshman and helping them out in that against Minnesota, doing some nice things late in the season. Last year came in, was supposed to be one of the top three running backs with Nakia Watson, Garrett Groshek. He got some carries early in that first game, got hurt, and we didn't see him the rest of the year. And he's a guy who's got wheels. He is probably the fastest kid in that entire running back room and can help them out in terms of his explosive playability, but it's a matter of he's got to be able to stay healthy. And he's entering that zone where this year he's a junior, but he's been on campus for four years. It's that moment where if he wants it, the second running back job is there. And I think you look at his skill set as a runner, he's a little bit heavier than Berger. He is able to catch the ball out of the backfield. If he can show that he can block, I think he could easily nail down that third down back, the change of pace back for Jalen Berger, and give them something a little different given how fast he is. I think he's the guy that comes to mind for me first, at least right away on the offense.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that name. I had him down as well, but I thought that might be the one that you let off with. So I'm glad I let you go first. But, yeah, I think that one is a great name in terms of it's time to see it from a guy like him. I think the interesting part of that is the depth of that room right now. You've of course got Jalen Berger, who's already kind of surpassed a guy like Isaac Arendo. You've got Julius Davis, who we think is a quality player. So I know we haven't really seen it, but he looks like a guy that's got a ton of talent. Garendo, you mentioned the injury bug. He's had that time and time again. And then you've got the incoming guys that aren't on campus this spring, but you're going to have, you know, Antoine Roberts, Loyal Crawford, Jackson Akers, kind of that flex guy. You don't know where he's going to be lined up at. But, yeah, I think Isaac Garendo right now is at a position where if he wants to make some inroads and be that number two running back, it's got to start right now because they're going to need somebody. It's going to have to be the likes of Davis, Garendo, or one of the young guys, but it's certainly there for the taking. Jalen Berger's, I think, your clear-cut starter and going to get a bulk of the carries, but a guy like Isaac Garendo could really benefit from spring practice, not having a ton of competition yet. If he can stay healthy, I could certainly see him making it. Or if he doesn't, you know, definitely falling down that depth chart a little bit. So I think that's a great name to lead off with.
Yeah, and it could have very easily been Julius Davis. And I don't know if you got him on your list, but he's another guy that very easily could have been in that discussion. I just went with Grando because he's a year older and figured his eligibility clock is ticking a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. All right, for my first one, I kind of have this guy and another one written down here because Isaiah Green-May, and I also have CJ Getz, because I think for Isaiah Green-May, we've talked about that, the length, the potential for years now, it seems. I mean, I think we've had this conversation on the podcast multiple times. Hasn't really panned out. Now you've got a guy like Caden Johnson. You've got Aaron Witt, TJ Bowlers, Herbig at that outside linebacker position. So, I mean, Herbig, I think, has already kind of surpassed him. I think a guy like Witt and Caden Johnson and TJ Bowlers all have the athletic ability to be in front of him. So maybe that project is already done. I mean, I hate to say that you're just going to write off a kid that's, you know, coming into his senior year or anything like that. So that's why I kind of wrote down CJ Getz as well, because I think there's a situation here at that outside linebacker position where these young, talented guys that are coming in, we've talked about it, how these recruits coming in are so strong and ready to play earlier than in years past. And that kind of gets this junior sophomore class that hasn't really panned out in some of these positions where you could get passed up by some of these younger guys. So I think both of those names are ones that if you're going to make some inroads and get some playing time at that outside linebacker position, this is the time to really do it, because you've got some really talented young guys nipping at your heels and coming pretty fast, and they're really talented players.
Yeah, I think both of those are really good selections. I think Getz, he played a lot last year, so, I mean, he's definitely a guy who's going to be able to help them out. I would anticipate that he's probably going to be the next guy up behind Burks on one side, and then you've got Herbig on the other. And maybe Aaron Witt's involved in one of those two as well to round up the two deep. But Isaiah Green-May, he's 6'6", 230 plus. Like, he's got all the measurables that you drew over, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy, has dealt with some issues with adding the weight and getting up to the weight and keeping it. And really, at this point, you wonder what they have in him and if this is going to be that light bulb moment for him. But right now, I think until I see it, like you mentioned, I think you have to look at that he's probably fifth on the depth chart, maybe lower. He's a senior. He's got his last year really to go here, and hopefully he can put it all together. Actually, he'd probably have another year because of the COVID waiver, but really, you look at it, he's got all the measurables, all the talent in the world. We've seen him get to the quarterback at times, but now it's a matter of he's got to jump over multiple players to try to get into that too deep and carve out a role, and hopefully he can do it because I think he's talented enough. But but I think right now I've seen more from CJ Getz through their careers, and I would give Getz a little bit more leeway because I think he's going to be definitely in the top four.
Yeah. Yep. No, I think that's a great assessment for sure. It's going to be interesting to see how both of those guys kind of shake out and how these young guys who are going to be pushing them kind of keep them going. All right. Who do you got for your next one on the list?
Okay, so next up, I would say is, for me, is going to be Travion Blaylock at safety. He's a kid who came in, he's dabbled a little bit at corner, dabbled a little bit at safety. He's entering, at least when you look at the roster, he's a junior, but because of COVID, he could still probably have a sophomore eligibility. So it's not like he doesn't have plenty of time to play. But you've got Colin Wilder coming back for that sixth year. You've got Scott Nelson in front of him. Those are probably your two starters. But behind them, there is wide openness for playing time. And I would think that Blaylock, we've seen him do some things on special teams. He had a really nice fumble recovery as a freshman against Iowa. I'm hoping that he can find a role because it's going to be a battle behind there because you also lost Madison Cohn. You also lost Dante Caputo, but you still have guys like John Torchio, who we've seen play and play well. Titus Toler, who we saw get a nice interception against Michigan last year, but he hasn't necessarily been able to stay healthy either. And you've got, we've already mentioned it, the talented freshman Hunter Waller coming in, who's also going to be wanting to get some playing time. And Tyler Mace is another guy who's helped them out on special teams routinely throughout his career. So Travion Blaylock, if he wants to nail down that third safety or even a fourth safety spot, there is a possibility for playing time, not maybe as much next year, like he'd be able to do some special teams, help out as a third safety when they need it, but really the year after that when Wilder might be moving on, when you might have Scott Nelson having the decision to make about his eligibility, I think Travion Blaylock is a talented player that Wisconsin's been high on. And now it's kind of, he's in make or break territory, I think, in terms of setting up his future for next year as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. That's one I didn't have on my list, but it makes a lot of sense when you look at, of course, the Reggie Pearson departure. You're going to have more playing time this year, but you've got Nelson and Wilder to hold down that spot. But, yeah, the rest of the group that you mentioned, Titus Toler, Torchio, all these guys can make a push at it. So if there's a guy like Travion Blaylock that you mentioned, you know, they're really high. They've been high on him, you know, early in his recruitment, early in his career. He's shown a little bit of flashes on special teams that he's got athleticism, but it's probably time. Yeah, it's probably go time for him to really make an inroad and see where they're at because you've got some safety leeway, you've got some depth, and you've got some options there that you can go with. So if it's really that whole secondary group that you mentioned. All of them can certainly make a name for themselves, but I would say Travion Blaylock's probably a guy that the clock might be ticking a little bit faster when you look at some of these other guys, you know, like a Titus Toler, only a sophomore, got some more opportunities versus Blaylock a little bit older and really timing, you know, time to start making some inroads there.
For sure.
All right.
Well, who's up next for yours?
I think this one might be kind of an obvious one when you look at it. A.J. Abbott, a wide receiver. Again, you know, we've already saw, you know, that last year coming into the year, you were talking about A.J. Abbott and Taj Mustafa like hand in hand with one another. Of course, Taj Mustafa's not on the roster now, so you've got kind of the situation for A.J. Abbott where he's in a little bit of, I would say, a logjam. You've got Danny Davis, you've got Kendrick Pryor. You've got two reliable starters, and then you've got the likes of, you know, Chimray Dike, Devin Chandler got reps last year, and then you've got a young guy, of course, not on campus, and Marcus Allen, but he's going to come in, and he's exceptionally talented. I think we both kind of agree that he could be a guy, even coming in just in the fall, that could make an impact and be a guy that, you know, sees his way onto the field at some point. So if you're A.J. Abbott and you're looking at your situation, you've got two guys in front of you. You got guys that are younger than you, possibly playing ahead of you, and then you've got even younger guys coming in. it's probably time for him to really make an impact. And if he's going to be on the field and be one of the top three, four wide receivers, they probably got to start seeing it right now, because if not, some of these other guys are probably going to make some jumps, like the Devin Chandlers, the Mark Thalens, and others that could certainly make a run at one of these wide receiver spots.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, because he is a kid that I think is in that time where he really needs to put it together and hopefully kind of make sure that he's one of those top four wide receivers, or top five, really, I think is what he's really fighting for. Because Krumholtz helped him out a lot last year as a blocker. I think Abbott could help them out because they're similar sized kids. Abbott's a pretty good blocker, where at the very least he gives them that. He caught a pass last year, has been involved. I think, though, that you look at it, you saw Taj Mustafa kind of step away. This is the time where A.J. Abbott needs to set it up, because you look at past this year. This upcoming year, you've got all those seniors. You've got three seniors, and then you've got Kimray DK, who are probably going to comprise your top four no matter what A.J. Abbott does, unless Abbott jumps over one of those guys. But after that, you've got those three seniors gone. Kimray DK is going to be there. Devin Chandler is going to be there. But Abbott could really blossom into a big play threat, because he's a big-bodied receiver who has just had a tough time with consistency issues. I think he has a chance to be the type of player that they need as a boundary outside wide receiver, but it's just going to be a matter of sticking around and really putting together a really good spring and offseason so that he's playing a little bit this upcoming year to propel himself forward for the year prior.
Yeah, I think that's all great points. As you look at that wide receiver room, some strong guys in front of them, but opportunities there for the future if guys want to take it. So that's definitely a name to keep an eye on in A.J. Abbott. All right, who'd you have next on your list?
Well, I mean, there's so many that we could talk about, but I'm going to go with Muma John Mehta. And this is one, I don't know, did you have him on your list?
I didn't, but I thought about it when I was going through the roster. I kind of wrote a note next to him that maybe, so I can definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah, so I don't think it's anything dire for him, mm-hmm. but you look at the complexion of that inside linebacker room, and right now you've got Sanborn, who you probably got him for one more year. I doubt he comes back for another go-around. You've got Leo Chenal, who's you probably got at least two more years of, and he's going to be your leader once Sanborn's gone at inside. But then you've got Mascalunas, who's also going to be gone. And all last season we saw in the two deep that it was Mike Mascalunas was your third and fourth inside linebacker, and that if anything went down, we actually saw Tatum Grass get reps. And that's nothing against Tatum Grass, because I think he's a really talented player. But I do think that John Mehta as a scholarship kid is in a spot where he's a class ahead of Malik Reed, Jordan Turner. They shifted Preston Zachman to safety, so that helps them out a little bit. But you've also got a couple other walk-ons. You've got Tatum Grass, like I mentioned, and you've got Ross Gengler. But then you have three really talented incoming freshmen, one of which is already on campus. And so I think when you look at it, Jake Chaney, I think, is going to be a type of kid who could make some waves this spring to kind of give himself a chance in the future. But I think Muma John Mehta is the type of kid who needs to have a really nice spring here to set himself up nicely to be one of those next guys in after Mascalunas. If not, I think he is a prime candidate to potentially see a shift to maybe even fullback or one of those other guys. Maybe Tatum Grass would be a shift to fullback, because I think those two, given where they're at eligibility-wise, both last year's were second year on campus but still freshmen, would make sense at fullback, and it might be a way to get them onto the field. I mean, and the same could be said for Jordan Turner and Malik Reed. They're just a little lighter, and I don't think that necessarily would fit as well at fullback. But I think this is an opportunity for them to show both Tatum Grass and Muma John Mehta, hey, I'm here to stay at inside linebacker, and I'm going to be part of the plan going forward. Because if not, I honestly think you've got Jake Retzloff coming in, you've got Brian Sanborn coming in, you've got Braylon Allen, who's probably going to end up at inside linebacker, and I don't know about you, but I'm kind of drooling over the idea of Jake Retzloff and Braylon Allen playing inside linebacker, because those two are super athletic and really talented players that I think could play really well at inside linebacker.
Yeah, I think that would be a phenomenal tandem. So you certainly see a situation. I'm glad that you kind of said his name, because that was one that I kind of had it written down. You know, he seems like such a young player, you know, listed as a sophomore, you know, currently on the spring roster. But even as a young player, you can get surpassed by some of the – I mean, Jordan Turner, Malik Reed, the guys that have talent, and then you talk about that incoming crop of young guys that are just so good and certainly will make a run at things. So, you know, the Jake Rotsloff, the Braylon Allens, guys that, of course, we'll have to see it once they are on campus, but just seeing what you see on tape, those guys just seem to have something a little bit different than what you're normally getting from a guy coming in and taking over in an inside linebacker position. So that's, I think, a great name in terms of guy to keep an eye on, because he's got, you know, the abilities, the athletic abilities, the talent, but that's just an inside linebacker position that has so much young and up-and-coming talent that there's only really, you know, you've only got the two spots, so it's going to be, and of course you rotate some, but if you want a bulk of that playing time, it's probably time to really start seeing it.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with you.
Moving on down the line, I've got a couple more listed, but I'll do one more, and this one I wrote down Isaiah Mullins, because I think you've got a situation where you've got Matt Henningsen as a starter, but then you've got guy, and I think Isaiah Mullins right now definitely could be a starter, there's no doubt about that, but you've got younger guys, again, nipping at your heels. You've got Cade McDonald, you know, Rodus Johnson sounds, from what we've heard, being a guy that is making a wave already, so that maybe puts a little bit more pressure on Isaiah Mullins to get going. You've got a guy like James Thompson Jr. Of course, you know, I know he's been battling some injuries. You've got Mike Jarvis coming in early, and then they took a transfer in Isaac Townsend. So you've got situations where maybe really that entire group I said outside of Matt Henningsen is going to be pushing for playing time, but Isaiah Mullins, of course, as a junior, you're in that situation where your clock is ticking a little bit more than some of these younger guys, like, of course, Mike Jarvis, James Thompson. Isaac Townsend could be a guy situation where he's still got, you know, years of eligibility. So the clock is probably ticking a little bit more on Isaiah Mullins. Now, he could come out and have a really strong spring and have a strong fall and be a starter. But if not, I could certainly see, you know, a guy like Rodus Johnson, who's in Preston, and Cade McDonald, you know, making a push for playing time and getting into that defensive end rotation and possibly a starter as the year goes on.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one, because I would imagine that he's going to be a starter next year. I think he's done some nice things as a reserve defensive lineman, you know, tucked behind a couple of really talented guys. But I think he's a starter, but you got to make sure that you hold off those younger guys and that you maintain that starting role. So I'm glad you brought him up. Who else did you have on your list?
Yeah, I had a couple other. I had this guy is another one similar to Isaiah Green-May, Daron Harrell at quarterback or cornerback. You've got the starters ahead of him: Caesar Williams, Fayon Hicks, and then you've got, you know, the guys behind him: Ingram, Alexander Smith, the younger guys, Max Lofi, Samar Melvin, Dante Burt. I mean, there's just so much talent. You know, Harrell as a senior. I just, again, that might be a situation where maybe the ship has already kind of sailed. Again, you don't want to give up on a guy like that, but he just hasn't. He's had opportunities in playing time and just hasn't really, you know, made an impact and been out there. And I think there's a lot of talent that could get out there. And then we talked about it earlier. I think someone in that offensive line room, and maybe it's Joe Tippmann, just with the Brown, Jack Nelson, and then you've got young guys coming after Cormac Sampson. Someone in that, I think, you know, too deep of the offensive line might be getting pushed out a little bit just based on the talent in the room. So I know we already kind of hit on that, but those are the last two that I had written down.
Yeah, I totally agree with Daron Harrell. I mean, that kid's been an enigma ever since he got on campus, because he's got the length of 6'2", 180 some, and he played so much and was a starter and did so many nice things. There was a lot of hype around him in fall camp 2 years ago, and then just completely fell off the face of the earth, but is still on campus. And like, you would have thought that maybe if he was upset about it, he wouldn't be still here. Like, he would have maybe transferred, but he's a kid who played minutes last year, played a lot of games, but it's hard to know what's going on there. Hopefully he can put it together, because he does have some physical traits that they don't have elsewhere. I think Caesar Williams is the next closest that they have in terms of his length. So I love that pick. On the offensive line, the name I would say, and agreeing with you that this a guy is Josh Teltner, who's kind of right now he's in that two deep at left guard, but we've seen him kind of really bounce up and down the depth chart a lot, and he's never really nailed down a secure starting spot. He's been a hybrid guy. He's shared that role at times, and this year maybe it's that time where he's going to take over the role and it's going to be his. And Buffalo Head is going to be the difference maker at left guard, but you wonder if it's going to be something to where he shares time again and Cormac Sampson's in there, or kind of what's going to happen there, because I think Seltzner, he's entering his senior year. I mean, like I said, the whole COVID waiver thing is you don't really know where guys are at eligibility-wise because they still have a decision to make. But he's a kid who's got the size. He's one of the strongest guys on the team, but he is one of the older guys on that line, and can he maintain that and firm up that starting spot, I think, is a major question. And so I'm glad you brought up the offensive line as well. And I would say – tight end room, you've got Jalen Franklin as a guy because of that position shift, that if he wants to make a move and kind of carve out a role as a pass catcher, he would want to have a good year to kind of set himself up for that. And really, if you want to go quarterback, you would probably say Chase Wolf because he's got the same, you know, he's at the same eligibility time almost as Graham Mertz. He's actually a year older, and he's probably not going to be your starter over Mertz. So does he stick around, especially when you've got another talented quarterback coming in the fall and everything? So I think Chase Wolf is another kid where if he can't beat out Mertz this year, what does that look like going into the following season?
Yeah, I think both of those are strong names to have on there as well, because Jalen Franklin, you know, they switched him there for a reason. You know, they think that they've got something that they can have there. They've got enough tight ends where they didn't necessarily, you know, it's not the same situation as a couple of years ago where they were just looking for bodies to get in there at tight end. They've got enough now that they didn't need to make that switch if they didn't want to. So you got to think that they have something that they think Jalen Franklin can do there. So that one makes a lot of sense. But again, you've got to see it. You didn't see it last year. You've got to, you know, him moving. Now you've got him moving into that position for a full spring season. So that one makes a lot of sense. And then, the Chase Wolf one, the writing is kind of there that Graham Mertz is going to be the guy. You expect him to have a bigger year where, you know, if he had a terrible down year, maybe there's more of a competition the following year. But I think that's certainly a situation as well. Chase Wolf was a pretty talented kid coming out of high school, fairly highly recruited that way. So it's certainly an interesting situation for a lot of these guys. I mean, you talk about it, it's really a – most of the situations that we touched on were guys with either, you know, kind of guys in front of them and guys coming behind them that if they're not, you know, sinking or swimming, or if they're not swimming, it's going to be sinking down, which I think made the exercise a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. I always enjoy this, especially when we can kind of ping pong back and forth and talk things through, because a lot of times we'll agree on certain things, but it's nice when we can pull on some of these things, because I totally, like, Daron Harrell was the next guy on my list. I was like, that's the guy, because I actually think he's like the quintessential this exercise right now, just because it is where you don't have Rashad Wild Goose, so there is a corner spot open. Does Harrell take that and then Hicks go inside, or what does that look like? But really, I think this was a really fun one.
Yeah, it certainly was. And it'll be interesting now that we've kind of said these names to keep an eye on and keep an eye out for any news stories that sees where these guys are kind of trending, what direction they're headed as spring football continues on. All right, guys, that wraps up another episode of the podcast. Hope you enjoyed this exercise. I know we both did, as we mentioned. We'll, of course, be back with you next week. And as always, on Wisconsin. Thank you.